I'm looking forward to talking through athletes ministry with you. My name is David. Any collegiate athletes in the room? Cool. What's your sport?
Football.
Okay, cool. What position? All right. Offense, defense,
offense.
And track and field.
Yeah, where?
Western State.
Yeah, cool. All right. And what's yours?
And track for an event.
Okay. All right. Wow, this is great. This is great. Awesome. Anybody else? Anybody else wish they were a collegiate athlete? Yeah. Let's pray, and we'll kind of jump into this. God, we know that you are sovereign and powerful and wise, and you can move and work in any group of people at any given time. And we've seen and we've heard stories of how you've done that among athletes. God, we pray that today as we come together to talk this through and discuss things and raise questions and share stories and ideas, God, that you would help us to refine the calling that you have for us, if indeed you've called us into athletes ministry. And if not, perhaps, God, you would open eyes to the opportunities on our campuses. God, mostly we want to make disciples of men and women, whether they're athletes or engineers, or both. So God, give us wisdom on how to talk that through. And God, may the nations be glad because of what we do here today. And I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Let me read a couple things for you. Someone said one coach will impact more young people in a year than others will in a lifetime. You know who said that? Billy Graham. I got that off Twitter. You guys... Okay, now that you guys can, you know, get up off the floor thinking, Englehart's on Twitter? Yeah, I never tweet, but I read the news and stuff. And that was a guy named Cliff Marshall that quoted Billy Graham. Cliff Marshall is a strength and conditioning coach in the NFL. Well, you think that's true? One coach will impact more young people in a year than others may in a lifetime. How many of you are former athletes? High school, middle school, or even former collegiate athletes? Yeah. My story, I can tell you this, the most influential men in my life as a young man were coaches. I was raised in a dysfunctional home where I didn't have that father like that. But I tell you, my 8th and 9th grade coaches, I didn't know it until years later when I started to look back and realize, wow, Coach Young and Coach Fisher, hard-nosed disciplinarians, taught me to be a man in ways that I didn't even realize. You know, it's amazing. And one of them was a believer. I didn't know that. I wasn't a believer at the time. Come to find out later that one of them was a believer, the other wasn't. But so I don't know that it was strategic on their part, but coaches have influence, don't they? They do. Sometimes bad influence. Sometimes bad if you ever stand around sometimes a college football practice. Here's another part of a story. It's an article out of the Chronicle of Higher Education, article called With God on Our Side. You guys know that Clemson beat Ohio State the other night, right? This is a story about Clemson. It says last season, is that head coach Dabo or Dabo?
Dabo.
Dabo Swinney. Head football coach at Clemson University gathered his team on the practice field one day for an important announcement. Someone is about to turn their life over to Christ, he said. And DeAndre Hopkins, a star wide receiver, stepped forward. A livestock trough had been placed near the 50-yard line and filled with water. Mr. Hopkins, still wearing his uniform and pads, climbed in. As several dozen teammates and coaches looked on, he was baptized. At Clemson, God is everywhere, the article says. The team's chaplain leads a Bible study for coaches every Monday and Thursday. Another three times a week, the staff gathers for devotionals. Nearly every player shows up at a voluntary chapel service the night before each game. The players all know the coach's favorite Bible verse is 1 Corinthians 9, 24 and 25. They quote a part of it, run your race to win, don't just run the race. Coach Swinney says to his recruits, I'm a Christian. If you have a problem with that, you don't have to be here. That's pretty awesome. You should read the rest of the article. I can give you the online address if you want that. It really is an encouraging article. But that's not my experience at New Mexico State. I've been the Christian Challenge director there since 85, and I've worked with athletes off and on during those almost 30 years. More recently, I've been working with the football team for the last 5 years, and that is not my experience. I don't know if that's your experience at CU. I don't know if that's your experience at, where are you again?
Western,
at Black Hills, in Oklahoma, you know, wherever it is. That's not our experience at New Mexico State. In fact, the year before I started working with the football team at NMSU, two Muslims sued the football team for saying the Lord's Prayer after practice and won. The university settled out of court. So the university is very gun-shy at NMSU. My guess is that's probably the more likely scenario this side of the Mississippi. At least this side of Texas. We're not in the Bible Belt. Not in New Mexico. Not even close. And so there's a strong suspicion toward any kind of official involvement with an athletic team at New Mexico State. Same thing with CU in any way?
No, it's good.
Okay, getting better?
Yeah, we just found FCA starting.
Okay. Okay, and so it's okay to start FCA. I'm talking about having that kind of a head coach stand up and say, hey, buddies, 50-yard line, we're baptizing today. Anybody open? I haven't seen that. In fact, I think if I did that, I'd be out, and probably the university attorney would be freaking out. Right? That's what I'm talking about. We're from coaches down, head coach of the football team down through all the assistants, the associates, player development, trainers, doctors, athletes, everybody thinks it's a great idea. Everybody thinks it's a great idea. Even the ones that don't want to come to chapel or Bible study. But above head coach, when you get to the athletic department and the university president, those guys, oh man, that's a scary thing for them. And so that's what I face. That's some of the situation that I face. Listen, I am not an expert in athletes ministry. I'm an old jock. Old is the key word. You know, and I loved athletics growing up. I thought in fourth grade, I was going to grow up to be a PE teacher and coach. And I got my degree in PE at New Mexico State. And it wasn't until the fall of my senior year that God called me to ministry. So I was on track to be a PE teacher. I love that arena. I love that world. But I'm not an expert. I've learned a few things, and maybe we can share a few things. And you guys, I know, have some insights, especially the athletes yourselves, with ideas on how to reach athletes and what are some of the challenges. The scenario for me is, one, when Dwayne Walker came in 5 years ago as our head coach, and he's now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He left 4 years after he got there. My word to him was, I'm more, as a man my age, with a wife and family, I'm more interested in being a man who helps support and pastors and shepherds the coaches and their families than anything. Because, man, what I see is just that turnover and the upside and the up and down and the movement, the transient nature of football coaching. He was very open to that. And, of course, the opportunity, the access to the athletes themselves. So there's all kinds of angles on this that a lot of people don't think about. I've enjoyed it. I love being with the team. I love being with the coaches. Not all the coaches think it's great that I'm there, but most of them do. Not all the players think it's great that I'm there. Most of them do. But I love being that. But let me just preface this whole thing by saying that's not my calling. I haven't been tempted to drop my position at Christian Challenge and say, okay, I'm going to become full-time chaplain for the university, and I'm going to work with all the different, because people say, well, you work with a football team, you work with basketball. Do you realize how often I'd travel if I traveled with the basketball team? you wouldn't be able to be a Christian Challenge director if you did that. Traveling with the football team is hard enough. That's not my calling. It's an element of campus ministry. It's no different than having a Bible study at a fraternity or in the engineering college. Or any affinity group on campus. The difference is, I love it. I love being around athletes. I love being around football. I love being around the coaches and the practices and the games. It's something I really enjoy. So it's not hard for me to do. But I'm not an expert. And truth is, I don't have a whole lot of time to put into it. so I'm limited. And that's my guess, is for most of you, that's going to be the case. Let me just get some early feedback. Some of you, give me an idea. Why did this seminar intrigue you? Why are you here?
I want to be able to reach my teammates.
Okay. Yeah, for the athletes, I'm going to guess it has to do with wanting to find a way to reach your fellow teammates. That the insider, man, what an opportunity that is, and yet a challenge, because you're the insider. And athletes' ministry, my exposure to it, you guys can fill me in here, but the collegiate athlete lives a life that the average student has no idea what it looks like. They are around their team so much. It's because of practices and meals and meetings and all that. Man, they are insiders, and we're not. And so what an opportunity to be able to connect with them. Yeah.
I've always had a love for sports, not to mention a love
for... Praying for you on the Chiefs, man. That was a tough game, dude.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I used to work for them.
Okay. All right.
That's a
cool
special attachment to the
Yeah.
Leaders.
All right. So just a love for sports.
And a love for God.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm a residence hall director at my college, and my hall has a lot of athletes.
Oh, yeah?
Rodeo and wrestling.
What, wrestling and what?
Rodeo.
Rodeo. All right.
So today I was stressed out because my primary focus in our ministry is the international students.
Uh-huh.
You should see me on tailgate day.
Yeah, okay.
But our two staff people that aren't here are they're focusing on the FCA stuff, segment of our ministry.
Okay. Yeah.
They're not here, so I'm taking that.
All right, good. Anybody else?
I know a lot of athletes, and I was highly competitive at sports in high school, and I thought about partaking in college sports, but then I knew that my grades would suffer, so I decided not to.
Yeah.
So I could relate to them in any way.
All right. Yeah. You know, here's my observation on athletes. One, regardless of what campus you're on, there's hundreds of them. And most of them are identifiable because they wear their stuff all the time. Because they're always working. It's not, and some of them because they're showing it off. But that's because they just got it. But a semester later, they're wearing it just because they're going from class to workout. So they're identifiable. There's dozens, if not hundreds, depending on the size of the campus. There's a bunch of them. And here's my exposure. There's a lot of them are believers. A lot of them are believers. Same with the coaches. A lot of them are believers. And there's a bunch of them, besides the believers, that are very open to the gospel. They're very open to the gospel. And then there's a smaller percentage that are just kind of closed off and like, That's my experience at MSU. It's a field that's white for harvest. And I'm guessing that's true at any campus. What are the challenges for the believing collegiate athlete? What happens? What are the things that might get in the way, that might be a hindrance to the collegiate athlete in walking with God?
Competitive settings often aren't like positive environments. And then I know for like our school for football especially, it's like, hey, like we just won, let's go have a party, like let's go get a beer.
Yeah. And it's a club. It's really a fraternity or sorority, isn't it? I mean, in a general sense, it's the social club. There's so many natural relational connections. What are some other things that could be hindrances?
Well, there's a lot of secular aspects, like all athletics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Group mentality. So if you don't get the captain of the team, you're going where captain's going.
Yeah, at least it can be. It can be that way, yeah.
Athletes can be very exclusive, and if they don't like how you are, or, you know, or even if it's not the same sport as you, they don't include you in their circle just because you're an athlete. But if you, you know, share and stand up for what you believe, you could be dissed on your team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All of those, you know, and I'm thinking just in general, I mean, anybody here have trouble getting up and having a quiet time? Yeah, ever? Anybody ever had trouble getting up and having a quiet time? I mean, athletes' schedules are demanding. And they can, in a lame way, let's admit it, they can that can become an excuse for not walking with God, just on a personal level, not being in fellowship with God. Because you have 6 a.m. meetings, or you have workouts, and you're worn out, and you got to go to the weight room, and right? I mean, the coaches, I mean, depending on the sport, too, it varies depending on the sport, but the coaches own your time. And so sometimes that can just become kind of an attrition kind of a way of causing the cleats. And I see that a lot with the football team. There's some guys that love the Lord. I have those conversations, but they're not walking with Him. And the challenge for me is, what's my role in their life? I told Coach Martin, Doug Martin's our head coach, and he's a believer. He loves the Lord. He does. And I'm grateful. And he is very happy to have me there. But I told him just about a couple weeks ago, right as school was ending, maybe it's been almost a month now, I said, I think I'm going to grab one of the offices in the coach's facility. And I'm just going to hang out here one day a week, or one afternoon. And you got wireless, all this. I'm going to make that my office. He said, that's fine. Why? Because then I'll see the athletes. They're not going to come to our building on a routine. We're clear across the campus. They're at the stadium. They're at the weight room, right? And so it's hard to connect with those guys. And even if they want to, they don't always make it happen. Now, I want to talk about what are the risks of focusing your ministry on athletes. Cody, what would you say? Cody's a former athlete, right? Cody played for Greg Brandon, our offensive coordinator. Did you guys know that? Yeah. So what are the risks of focusing on collegiate athletes?
One thing that comes to mind is they can take up a lot of time when their response isn't maybe as great as maybe some of the other guys I can spend time with on campus.
Yeah.
So it might suck some of my time up. And like you said, it's enjoyable, so I could end up spending a lot of time there because it is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's talk about disciple making. This is by the way, I don't know if you read that description, but this is about making disciples of athletes. If our goal isn't to make disciples, what are we doing? If it's to hang out with athletes and enjoy the time, be at the practices, know the coaches, pat them on the back, you know, in my case, I get to travel with the team. If that's the goal, then I'm so far out of line with what God's calling me to do. If the goal isn't to make disciples of collegiate athletes, then I shouldn't be in there. But it's hard. It's hard. In just making disciples, in your experience, as a disciple and as you've begun to now make disciples on your campus, have you begun to seek out, what are the qualities that you look for in a prospective disciple before you're willing to covenant with him or her to invest your time in them?
Teachable, available, hungry.
Yeah. Okay.
Sandra's favorite is fat. Faithful, available.
Yeah. Similar. Yeah. What else? I think of, to the extent that I can perceive it, I gotta know if they're gonna buy into making disciples. Anybody ever spend a year discipling someone who didn't turn around and make disciples? I do. You know, because you can't know for a fact, and you don't even know later on. Maybe they will turn around, but I think that's one of the biggest challenges with athletes. I have athletes, and I've had athletes who really want to meet with me. They're teachable. They're hungry. They're available. They're faithful. They want to meet with me, but they don't necessarily want to make disciples. That sounds like the average church member. Right, Rowdy? So how do you know? I mean, how do you interface with that? How do you figure out what level of investment with athletes you should take? Anybody part of an athlete's Bible study? Okay. So they have athlete's Bible study. So that's a great way to just for fellowship and encourage, right? Yeah. So that's I would say that's one particular way to begin to at least gather athletes. Is to just say, hey, we're going to have a Bible study. I mean, you got to have some credibility, don't you? Because of that insider thing, you got to have some credibility. The athletes can be pretty exclusive, but if you have that credibility and you are able to build a little bit of relationship, and you have a few athletes, then they can begin to bring others. So that's a great way to begin to at least encourage them. It's hard for us, to be honest with you, to get consistent involvement in our ministry from athletes. They're very involved. Whenever I step out on the campus at the stadium or at the coach's offices, they're very involved on that level, come to chapel, that kind of thing. But only a few of them ever really trickle into our ministry and buy into our DNA.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I found out that our chapter of FCA at North Missouri State focuses more on the Christian side.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, right. And by the way, we don't have an FCA. We've had it kind of off and on. We don't have any athletes ministry on our campus. And I think athletes would come. Again, I've thought about starting our version of FCA and just say, hey, look, we're doing this. But then I thought, no, just come on Thursday night. We do worship. We do fellowship. We have preaching. You know, why not just come on Thursday night, man? And we set our campus meeting time, our worship time at 9 o'clock. To allow for athletes who have study hall requirements to be able to still come.
I was going to say one of the hardest things as an athlete is the hierarchy system that you have to be above. It's kind of the way it works to like reach those lower. You can't really go the opposite way because they're not going to listen to you.
You're a punk. If you're a freshman, you're a punk, aren't you?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you weigh 295 pounds. You're a punk. Yeah. Yeah. Agree. Yeah. Leah, would you share the prayer ministry idea that you came up with?
Yes. So last semester, or this like 2013 fall, I kept hearing God say, like, there needs to be a prayer group started for athletes, specifically toward praying for athletes only. So I was like, who's going to come on? Like, I would talk to people about it, and finally I realized God was like, Leah, like, you start this. And I was like, that I'm an athlete. And so ended up talking to some people and getting a little bit of involvement and starting it every 2 weeks. So and really what it is, what I wanted it to be was where some people from our ministry and even other ministries on our campus would come and pray for athletes. It's just 8:30 and we rarely even go to 8:30, but I'll have specific things there where one night we'll be talking or we'll be praying about the football team specifically and their upcoming games and then specifically spiritually. So we'll divide it up and pray for the different athletes. And what I've seen this semester is my teammates, because of the way that I have it set up on Facebook and everything. And so some people have seen when we're meeting and everything, but my teammates have come. And I don't really know, I haven't had those deep conversations with some of them, with the cross-country team, some of the boys come, and some of the cross-country girls, and a few of the girls from the track team have come. But through that, they're also getting plugged in with our campus ministry, and they want to come to the Christmas party, and they want to come to our 9 o'clock worship. And so I've just seen God use that kind of as a tool. And the power of prayer is just, I'm trying to remind the people that come that even as small as it is, maybe there's 8 to 15 people that come every night, praying for them is loving them. And so for them to hear that or even just see the Facebook page, even if they don't like it or they don't follow it or whatever, they're seeing that there's a group of people out there that are praying for them, whether that's for the we pray for the injured athletes. And so they're getting that prayer, and then they're getting that spiritual benefit for that salvation. So.
Yeah, and you guys can guess this. I mean, that the athletes that hear about this really do appreciate it. Even the ones that wouldn't necessarily come. Because it's meant to be athletes coming to pray as well as non-athletes. But right now, mostly athletes are showing up. A few of our students and a few athletes are showing up. And whenever we were able to put those posters up around the football locker rooms and stuff, the coaches, the athletes, oh man, that's great. There's a way to text or to email your prayer requests in, and Leah gets those. And so the point of that is, you know, I don't know if you athletes feel this way, but the world wants something from you. You know, I mean, your campus wants something from you. It may be wins. You know, they want a winning record. They want recognition because of, you know, the world is set up to want something from athletes. Athletes are in position and they owe us to excel. Rarely does the world say, "What can we do for you? How can we pray for you?" Now, on the flip side, the world would say, "Yeah, dude. I mean, they're on scholarship. What do you mean, man? They got their room paid. They got free tuition, right? They're thinking they got it all free." And to some degree, that's true. But the irony of that is, not everybody out there on that football field or on the basketball team or cross country or track or swimming or whatever is on scholarship. Not everybody is, or they're on a quarter scholarship or half scholarship or whatever, you know. But it's a misunderstanding. So to simply express concern. To say, "Hey, we're doing this," and you could do that in terms of a Bible study. You could do that in terms of prayer ministry. You could do that in terms of meals. You know, you could say, "Hey, can we grill some burgers after swim practice? One day, just once, Coach. Would it be okay if we just grilled some burgers for your team?" You know, those kinds of things to serve the athletes. So there's some challenges there. But
we have almost the opposite feeling happening. It feels like we see students, they're like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." Like, I hate when people see me, the very first thing everyone starts apologizing. I hate that feeling. Like, you don't owe it to me to come to the thing. You know?
Yeah.
But I am here for you.
Yeah.
I'll come as long as we're here. So it's completely switched. It feels like.
My experience on that is that's an initial response, and after they get to know me for a while, then they get used to not coming, and they don't feel nearly as guilty. You know?
They're used to not coming?
Yeah, and what I'm saying, if I hear what you're saying,
usually they stop.
Yeah, they don't feel obligated because I'm around the team. I mean, initially there's a lot of interest, and they feel in some ways. Listen, this is funny, but athletes, think about this, especially football players. If Coach Walker goes to chapel, pregame chapel, maybe I should go to pregame chapel. Maybe that'll get me a little more playing time. I'll get a little favor from him. You know, that's the way people think. It doesn't work that way on the field, I don't think. But there can be that kind of thing. But after a while, they realize, I need to earn my spot. I need to earn my time. And so they kind of get used to that. The initial interest in athletes' ministry is kind of a on their side, it's kind of an appeal to them. It's like, "Hey, that sounds cool." But after a while, if they're not genuine in wanting to come, it's hard for them to keep coming.
Right. Well, then now, so many student-athletes have talked it up and then in front of each other. Now, you kind of...
Yeah.
You don't look right now because you're talking up so much in front of your buddy, and to us, or in front of your coach.
Yeah.
To us, and then never come.
Right.
And the coach asks, "Hey, how's it going?" "Well, there's a football player here."
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he heard all the talk, and so now, if the sorries don't happen, it's complete. "I don't know you." "I know who you are. Come over here."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So just all around.
And part of that is, you know, you're joining a community. The more opportunity you have, you're walking into a community, and you're an outsider, and they may be a little more hospitable to you because you're an outsider. But eventually, I'm just Pastor Dave, and it means nothing apart from that, unless they have some interest.
Can you comment on, like Cody was kind of talking about, sometimes athletes feel harder to reach because when you first come to college, you're kind of looking for a place to belong. Well, athletes already kind of have that.
Whether they want it or not, they are part of a club.
And I feel like there's also kind of like a false sense of security in their sport. Like it's easy to make sport our God, you know? And so there's kind of like that idolatry thing going on. So like the kind of insecurities that push normal college students towards ministry, like, don't really seem to be there for athletes until they like get injured or something. Can you comment on like is there like, do you have any advice or like strategies on like how to kind of help them see like that they're not as secure as they think they are?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And again, that comes mostly through relationship. Mm-hmm. And that relationships take time and a willingness to invest time. It doesn't have to be tons of time. It has to be consistent time. And, you know, so the degree to which an athlete will allow you to get to know them is up to them. But it's, to some degree, it's up to you, too, on how you manage yourself and how you handle yourself. But
give us some other ideas about getting the right time. We can't get enough. I mean, doesn't
yeah.
take time.
So, you know, yeah.
At 9 o'clock. That's a good thought for me. At 9 o'clock.
You know, I just got back. I just drove into town about an hour ago. I had to leave. I forget my days. Is today Sunday? I had to leave Friday, fly to Dallas, do a wedding. And I flew back early this morning to get here in time for this, to do a wedding for one of our former athletes. And a football player who turned to a baseball player. He's playing. He got drafted by the Orioles. He's kind of in the farm system now. And so Tanner Rust. Tanner from San Diego came in, quarterback. Hot shot, you know, which, by the way, something you guys should all probably know is there's not a single person on any collegiate roster of any sport who was a mediocre athlete in high school. Did you know that? They're not bums. They're not bums if they're not starting. They're not. They're not bums if they're not winning. Pray for the Aggies, okay? Boy, we need to win. We struggle. We've struggled for decades. And I'm standing out there on that. I go to practice most afternoons for a few minutes. I'm standing out there with these guys. There's not a guy at NMSU, which is in the lower rung of the D1 football. There's not a guy on that roster who wasn't an excellent high school football player. Now, I know there's levels of excellence, obviously. We don't have any 5-star recruits on our campus. We don't have any 4. But they're athletes. And Tanner came in. He was a hot shot quarterback from San Diego and never got to play. Whatever reason, another thing that happens and something that you got to click with, and maybe it's more in football than it is with other sports, but nothing is more disheartening than being recruited by a coach who leaves a year later. Because you were his guy, and now the new guy says, I don't know who you are. Right? And that happens a lot at MSU. Coaches come and go. They get fired a lot, but they also get cherry-picked because we can't pay them what someone else can. Tanner got hidden. He got lost. Great athlete. Better football athlete than baseball, actually. But he's got drafted to play baseball. And Tanner came to Christ through a chapel service, pregame chapel service, which, by the way, this kind of hits back on what you were saying. I decided, right at the beginning, I decided, okay, I am a disciple maker. I'm a lover of Jesus. I'm going to preach the gospel. When I get those guys in a room, and it's usually about this many people, it's usually anywhere from 20 to 30 guys that show up with coaches, a few coaches. Sometimes it's more, sometimes less, depending on the travel schedule. But I'm going to preach the gospel. I'm going to talk about all kinds of stuff that's going to be motivational, but I'm going to talk about needing Jesus. One day Tanner came up and said, hey, I trusted Jesus. I said, really? When? He said, chapel. And you know what he was doing? Every game, chapel set for such a time, Tanner was there an hour early with his Bible. And we sat in his room just like this at hotels. Sat down, and we just started to work it. Tanner was hungry. He was wanting it. Okay, and there's some guys like that that'll want that. Now, and I was also meeting with him during the week in my office. So there were that kind of accessibility, but not everybody wants that. And especially, my experience is, especially the Christian athletes. They're hard. There's a kid that's a recruit from Hobbs that I have all but put a knot on his head. I mean, he raised up in one of our Southern Baptist churches over there. His youth pastor gave me his name. I call him up and says, "Yeah, man, that's great." He's come to our worship thing once. And there's no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse. Now he avoids me when I come to practice. I don't even know him well enough to know if he's walking with the Lord on his own and maybe just doing stuff. You know, maybe he's doing other stuff, but I don't get the impression he is. So it's hard. And some of it is because they get sucked into this and that, and they're living with a bunch of guys, and right? And that's no different than the average pastor's son who shows up on campus. You ever have trouble reaching pastor's sons, Rowdy? They're harder than anybody, aren't they? It's tough. All you pastor's kids out there. What other questions? Yes, sir.
That's kind of a different situation. Like, kind of a gym rat, so hanging out with a lot of past athletes and just some different guys that I see almost every day. But it's just real hard because in the gym it's kind of a rough place to be around. It's a lot of pride. These guys, you know, they're very, very athletic and just, you know, they just think a lot of themselves.
Really? Athletes?
No. So it's hard to, like, really, you know, get anything across to them. But I know, like, I see them almost every day, so it's like, it's a great opportunity to talk to them about it. You know, it's one of the most intimidating places. So it's like, what do you have?
Yeah, and I think you're right. But the bottom line is, again, you have, in some ways, earned a spot in that small circle of acquaintances that some collegiate athletes have. You've earned a spot there to some degree. I would say, on one hand, the same thing I would say to any believer in any situation that's moving into a new environment is be sure that you identify yourself very clearly and early as a believer. Don't think strategically holding back and bringing that up as a hammer at some point is going to work better. Identify yourself early. That doesn't mean necessarily you have to get on your soapbox, but just let people know. Let them know you love the Lord, and that you play gym ball for the Lord. That you're guarding your heart, you're guarding your attitude. You can be just as competitive without using the language, just as competitive without arguing with people. You know, and that's a tough thing. For those of us who are ultra competitive, that's a hard thing to do. It's too easy to be like that, like them, when we're on the court, than not. And so I think that's one. The other part of that is pray that God, here's my advice, pray that God would give you one guy that you can kind of resonate with. It's hard to witness to a group. It's hard to have a spiritual conversation with a group, especially in the gym. But man, prayerfully ask God and begin to do incremental things. Take incremental steps toward kind of scouting him in terms of his level of interest. And that could be in terms of social stuff, going to eat. It could be going hanging out. It could be whatever you guys do, you know, on your campus. But to get that one-on-one time, even if it's just offering the guy a ride. Not all athletes, by the way, have cars. You know, and so I would pray for one initially, and just see how that's going, and then let that kind of begin to multiply. It's a little easier. It's not always going to work, and you might have to have more than one that you're targeting, but not trying to do them together. But what do you guys think? How would you guys respond to that? Anybody? Inviting them to church, you know, invite them to campus ministry, let them know about it. Say, hey man, why don't you come with me? Or you guys do a meal, or you're doing some kind of a event. You know, we have a Foursquare tournament. Sometimes you guys know what Foursquare is. Sometimes we have Foursquare tournaments. It's amazingly competitive. Just like elementary school, you know. And so just inviting them to those kinds of things where they can begin, you can get that kind of time with them.
I have two questions. How do you have athletes who consider your, like, they show up on your regular night? What's your regular night?
Thursday.
They show up there and then they consider that their church?
Church. Yeah.
Also, how do you address the profanity and destructive lifestyle?
Yeah. I have students who consider our ministry church, okay, athletes or otherwise. So we have to continually, the way we address that is in our disciple-making strategy. As we're meeting one-on-one with students, part of that strategy is challenging them to be identified in a local church, okay, as well as in campus ministry. So we would do that with an athlete as well. The truth is, and I'm just now, Micah, my oldest son, gave me a book for Christmas. You guys know that? You guys know who that is? RG3. It's a biography. It's not an autobiography. It's a guy named Dave Sheenan. And you know, I'm about halfway through, read it on the flight there and back. And one of the things he said, as he moved to D.C., when he got drafted, as he moved to D.C., he said he and his fiance found a church where they had a Wednesday night thing because he knew they weren't going to be able to go to church on Sundays. I don't know if you know this, but there's not too many football programs that allow you to go to church on Sunday. At least during the season. Most times, now, to Doug Martin's credit, he's left that open. He says to his coaches and his players, we have 1 o'clock meetings on Sundays. Whether we've traveled or not, 1 o'clock, you go to church if you want. Okay, but not many will do that. And so they've got to be creative in finding ways to get to church. And so in some ways, I'm not going to condemn them for coming to Crimson Worship on Thursday night instead of church. I'm not going to condemn them, but I'm going to encourage them to find a way to be a part of a church. Oh, and then the language?
Language and destructive lifestyle.
You know, it was pretty cool. I know this doesn't always happen. Back in 09, whenever Dwayne Walker came that spring, I was going to some of the spring workouts and stuff, and there were three or four coaches that were notoriously filthy mouthed. I mean, and I think some people just figure that's football, that's high school, that's collegiate football. And one of the things, by the way, I've been privileged to do is be able to meet one-on-one with the head coach. And I had a chance to just disciple Dwayne Walker. What a teachable man. I could rebuke him, and he would just humbly say, Dave, you're right. You know, and he's about one of the most intense men I've ever been around. And one of the things we talked about early was language. At the same time, we had a guy in our ministry who was a kicker for the Aggies. And by that fall semester, Jordan and I were meeting. I was discipling Jordan. By that fall, one of the times when Jordan and I met, he said, you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, but the coaches aren't cussing. He said, all the guys are noticing that. Seems weird. You know what Dwayne Walker did? He told his coaches, quit cussing. If they couldn't think of a more intelligent word to use, then don't talk at all. That's astounding to me. And the players noticed. Now, not all his coaches were believers, and not all of them fully complied. I just want you to know. We had a notorious offensive lineman, or offensive line coach, notorious for his language and his anger. And Coach Coach Walker and Coach Walker's wife and the offensive line coach's wife were sitting in the stands one day. I forget what, maybe it was this spring ball or something, and spring game. And the offensive lineman's coach's wife said to Coach Walker's wife, said, "You know, I don't know what's up, but Mike doesn't cuss as much as he used to." So I think to some degree, it's applicable. But man, if they're in a culture, well, and it, not just football, I mean, but if they're in a culture where they're always being cussed at, man, that's a tough one. And you can still help them, but I would say, I mean, same thing with an average student. I'm going to have greater influence if I'm meeting, what's your name?
Mark.
If I'm meeting with Mark one-on-one, I just have greater influence. If I ask him a question, nobody else is there to answer. I can challenge him, ask him to make some changes next week. I can find out if he has. Right. So the larger the group, the harder it is to change. And so that is a challenge. And the thing that I find actually more challenging is the kind of the double-mindedness of the college student, not just the athlete, but that they act one way when they're in this group and they act an entirely different way than that group. College students do that, period. People do that, and athletes do that as well. So I have never had a face-to-face confrontation with a coach over that. I feel like that's not my job. I definitely talk to players about it, mostly in a humorous way. So, what other questions? Yeah, well, and again, you know, one, I don't have a lot of time. I'm not a full-time chaplain, and so I don't know what they're doing a lot of the time. I don't know, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach the Bible very clearly. I'm going to talk about being men of God. I'm going to talk about excellence. I'm talking about honoring God in all things. And then I'm going to use examples of what that looks like. And so they're going to at least hear it from me. Hopefully they get it reinforced through their coaches. And again, coaches don't always understand the kind of influence, spiritual influence they could have. That's one of the reasons I love doing coaches' Bible study. This last fall, our coaches' Bible study was on the greatest mentors of the Bible. Man, it was awesome. It was awesome to just talk about all these different people throughout Scripture and how they challenged and led and guided and helped and, you know. And I just made it up.
I know that a lot of the girls on my team, like, every athlete just wants to get better, no matter what it is. So, like, we had a couple girls on the team that were going out a lot, like, on the weekends. And, like, obviously that's not healthy for the team, and that's not healthy for them as a person or in their faith. So a lot of it is just, like, hey, like, want to come over on Friday and, like, watch a movie or hang out or cook dinner or whatever. And then, like, that'll make you better for the workout the next morning or whatever. And then after you do stuff like that, it starts to catch on, like, why are you different? Why do you not go out? Why do you do things like that? And it starts to make them question. But it, like, initially starts with just that competitive nature of always wanting to be better.
And that brings up something. Let me say this before I forget. Those of you who are collegiate athletes, you have an extra burden. You have an extra burden. You've got to be an influence. Even if you're the punk freshman, you've got to have influence. And it will cost you. You got to be wise in it. You need wise counsel. You need people around you to help you, encourage you. But you can't be silent. You can't on that team. You may think you're the only believer on that team, when in fact there may be others who are just as freaked out or worse than you are. But you've got an awesome opportunity. It may not be something that you establish this amazing, you know, year-long ministry kind of thing, but you've got to have that kind of influence. And that's why what she's saying is true. I mean, you got to take that kind of initiative with your team. You can't go to those girls and say, hey, why are you drinking? Quit that. You guys are partying all the time. Okay, where's that going to go? It's the same place it would with any other college student. But you can be wise and prayerful in the way that you engage them to bring them into a different opportunity. So you got to be a witness. You got to be able to share your experiences. If God's teaching you stuff, share it in private with people. Be open to let people know that God's moving in your life. That's so vital.
Do you have any resources for coaches and how to use that influence?
You know, I brought a few things. Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys are you guys familiar with Sports Spectrum, the magazine, and it's a website as well. This. I buy these booklets at the beginning of the year and hand them out to the coaches and players that come to chapel. There's a few leftovers. I don't know what it means, but this year both of them were on Dallas Cowboy guys. So Jason Witten and Tony Romo. So you guys, there's probably not enough for everyone to take one of each, but maybe each of you can have one. I don't know if even there's enough for that, but... I like to put magazines in coaches' hands. The Sports Spectrum magazine, when I'm done with it, I hand it off. And then I usually buy the coaches a book every year. I just buy them a book. The football coaches, those are the only guys I'm around pretty much. I buy them a book. And if we're going to do a study sometimes, that'll be it. There's all kinds of pretty cool stuff. Here's one by Robert Walker called Wisdom and Sports. It's devotionals working through the book of Proverbs. It's pretty cool. By Core Media Group. I don't remember where I got it. Here's one called The Greatest Leader Ever. Talking about Jesus, and it has all these amazingly famous coaches and players who write about Jesus as a great leader. John Wooden, Tom Osborne, Tom Landry, Jackie Joyner-Kersee, a bunch of others. It's a great book. That's one to give, like to give to coaches. That'd be a good one to give to coaches. Men of Sunday. It's a devotional book for football coaches and players. And then this is one by Charlotte Smith. She played at Tech, Texas Tech, and then she's played in the WNBA, and now she's a coach. When Coaches Pray. It's a great study. It's a great, real short little, it's kind of, a devotional thing. Just real short, one or two page chapters. So there's all kinds of opportunities like that. And if you just kind of, if you go to the FCA website, they've got resources. You go to Sports Spectrum, you go to Athletes in Action. I forget. I just go to all those and pull stuff off.
One of my teammates I've really gotten to kind of share with her a lot this semester. One thing I did is, we're close enough, I took her phone and I uploaded the YouVersion Bible onto her iPhone. And that has an athlete's Bible. I think it has two or three like women athletes Bible studies in it. And so I told her, I was like, she's at that point where she is curious enough. And so I told her if she's going to do anything, like to use that and like reading her Bible. But I think that is interesting enough to her that there's something specifically designed for a woman athlete, like, and she has it right there in her phone. So if you have that relationship with someone, first of all, you can't be intimidated by an athlete just because they're an athlete. They want to be reached, and so you can't just, first you have to get over that and get close enough with them that you can be bold in sharing. And but I think that is also useful.
You know, that's a good point. Athletes, they do kind of have a rough exterior, and they can be very prideful, and they can be extremely competitive, but they also face all kinds of failure and disappointment. You know, at their positions, within the team, with injuries. I mean, they're actually pretty vulnerable. I remember a couple of years ago, Coach Walker, when I was meeting with him, he told me, he said he couldn't believe this happened. He was telling me about this. One of our defensive ends, a guy named Dante Savage, who got a free agent contract with the Green Bay Packers after that season, came into his office crying. I said, "What?" He said, he was in class and a professor. Because, I mean, our team loses. Our team loses every game just about. We win between 2 and 4 games a year. It's agonizing. And this professor in front of the whole class just stood there and began to make fun of Dante. Just mocked him. This is a guy, he's 6'5", 260. And Dante walked out of there crying and went to the coach's office. Think about that. The vulnerability. Is he a stud muffin? Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, and out, you know, but around his buddies, you know. But don't let the facade cause you to think that somehow God can't work in their life through you. Yeah.
I was going to ask, have you ever talked to Coach Walker about, like, say, one day after they are finished watching their films, you come in and show them, like, the movie Facing the Giants?
Okay, no, I haven't asked him that specific question. Because of, okay, I have about as much access to those football players as, in fact, I think I have more access to them than the position coaches. Position coaches coach offensive line. I talk to the whole team. So I have access to that team. A lot of times, and whether it's in chapel or whether it's in spring, when spring ball starts and they all gather the whole team and he introduces me and I do a devotional for the team. So I have access to them. This is part of the thing I would say to you, at least at the chaplain level, for my role. I don't think students will face this, but if I'm in an official role as a chaplain, I'm a volunteer. The university, you know, they know who I am, but like I said, we were sued because Coach Mummy, the previous coach, just had the team kneel and have the Lord's Prayer after practice each day. That was it. And all it took was two Muslim guys to stand up and say, you know, we feel like we've been discriminated against. And you know what that did to the university administration? Oh, whoo. Yeah. And so the coach, from the coach down, they're really interested in what we can do, but they're not going to create a platform for me. Now, this may not be the case in your campus. You may be in a whole different situation, but I can tell you this. I do a lot of stuff overseas. We send a lot of people overseas. I feel like in working with the administration, I'm like that missionary that's working among the unreached, and I need to have an STS. I need to have a simple, tenable statement that identifies myself to upline people, even when we're traveling. Who are you? What are you doing when I'm meeting the president or when I'm meeting, you know, some booster that's traveling? I don't say, oh, I'm the chaplain. I don't do that. I say, I'm a friend of Doug Martin's. I'm a friend of Coach Martin's. Why? Is that a lie? Why wouldn't I say I'm the chaplain?
It's all
what's that?
Kind of put someone on the trail.
Yeah. All it would take is for some booster that's putting a bunch of money in to come back and say, you know, to the AD or to the president, and then that puts pressure on the coach. And there's no reason for me. My target is the team and the athletes and the coaches. It's not the administration. All right, I think we're. I know we're out of time, right? 11:30. So I know we're out of time. Any final word on this? Let me say this. One of the challenges of working with athletes is that if we're not careful, we get caught up in the celebrity of it. And athletes, if they're not careful, will do things just for attention. And so you've got to be wise as you invest in people. Just know kind of where they are. And pour your life into them. Encourage them. Challenge them. But mostly, share the gospel with them. And on a one-on-one level, make disciples. Make disciples. And shepherd those who are hurting. Shepherd them. Help them. Let me pray. God, we know that you can move and work among the athletes on our campuses in unique ways, and we pray that you would do that. I pray you'd help everyone in this room to understand the role we might have in reaching athletes, in discipling athletes, in shepherding coaches and athletes. God, help us to be there for them, to care for them as we would any other group of students on our campus. All for your glory. And I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Thanks for coming, guys.
Copyright by the Navigators, 2014. All rights reserved.